back in session. We have Harmon Berkset versus Lynn Loofboro in the ICAO office, case number 2011-SC-926. Case is set for argument for 30 minutes, 15 minutes per side. Are both parties ready? A couple of quick housekeeping matters. I know you both were here for the first argument. One, please make sure you tell us who you are when you start your argument. Two, the petitioner will have to keep track of your time. And three, we're using iPads, which have our notes and our briefs that are linked to Westlaw, so we're not emailing or surfing while you're arguing. I want you to know that. Thank you. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Margaret Keck, and I represent the employer and the insurer in this workers' compensation case. I would like to refer to my clients as the respondents. If I may, I'd also like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
You have to keep track of your time, Ms. Keck.
Today, I wish to discuss two points. First, how the procedure in this workers' compensation case worked and how it should have worked but for interference by the administrative law judge in the Court of Appeals. And second, why the Court of Appeals decision has unnecessarily and severely degraded the statutorily mandated division IME process, not only for this case but for all open workers' compensation cases. I'd like to comment at the very start that the Court of Appeals decision in this case sets a very dangerous precedent. It opens the door on all open claims, both lost time and non-lost time claims, to award temporary disability benefits after the date of maximum medical improvement without setting aside the treating physician's determination of maximum.
Ms. Keck, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You only have a couple of minutes. You both dispute in your briefs whether or not this case is open. Whether or not it's an open case. There's a dispute, as I read it, and I'm just not clear. Why are you saying it's open? You say it was open because of the ALJ decision, but if you could just explain that.
Yeah. Well, the law states that when a case has been closed and reopened, a judge can start anew with determining whether a claimant is at maximum, entitled to temporary disability benefits without regard to what happened in the case previously. So it's important to know whether we're dealing with an open or a closed case. And in this case, it was open because Ms. Loofboro made a claim, and from that point in time it was open until it's closed. The statute doesn't define an open case, but it defines when a case becomes closed. So anything that isn't closed is therefore an open case.
Well, I thought you were arguing something very specific about Judge Felter's decision that made it open. Is that wrong?
I wasn't.
Okay.
The fact that the case is open is important only because the law is different for open cases and closed cases that are being reopened.
Part. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I'm still confused. The employer never admitted or stipulated in any way that maximum medical improvement had occurred. Is that right?
Correct.
Does that make a difference or not?
No.
Why not?
This case is in its infancy. What happened was Ms. Loofboro reported she injured her back on the job, and then she proceeded to get medical treatment without filing a workers' compensation claim. The employer provided that medical treatment. The law does not require the insurer or the employer to state a position at that time on liability for a claim.
Okay.
If she had wanted to contest it, she was placed at maximum medical improvement only a month after she sustained the injury. She hadn't missed any time from work. If she had wanted to contest her placement at maximum medical improvement at that time or any subsequent time, she could have done so simply by filing a worker's claim for compensation. That claim, when she filed, would trigger a respondent's obligation to state a position on liability. If they accepted liability, it would have then triggered her obligation to file a final admission of liability based on the fact that the treating physician had placed her at maximum medical improvement with zero impairment. Once that final admission of liability was filed, then she would have been entitled to a division independent medical exam, or a DIME, as we like to call it, in order to challenge maximum medical improvement. We didn't get to that process because Ms. Boothrow never filed a claim until several months later. By the time she filed the claim, she was arguing that an event in August of 2009 was related to the events in November of 2008. Respondents elected at that time to contest that the two were related and whether what was going on with her medically in 2009 was actually a work-related event.
Okay, so let's check the facts as they happen here. And it is that she gets pain, and she has pain, and she wants to relate it to a prior event. What is the proper procedure for getting compensated for that?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. But
let's take the facts as they are, that she does experience pain under your position. How does she get compensated for that? Is it an entirely new case?
No, it's the same case. The case was opened at the time she initially reported she'd been injured on the job. When she had the pain, she did what she's supposed to do. She reported it to the employer. When ultimately the employer and the insurer said, we don't think this is compensable, she, through her attorney, applied for a hearing. She could have applied for an expedited hearing. She could have moved the case forward very rapidly. She could have done that at any point in time. She could have filed a claim, which started the process in December of 2009. She could have done that of 2008 or any time forward after that. All she needed to do was report it, say, and file a worker's claim for compensation, which triggers the entire process and moves it forward. That's all she had to do. And she did, in fact, do that. It took her a little bit of time to get around to it, but she did, in fact, do it. She could have done it at any time. Am I answering your question?
I'm going to wait till you hear the rest of the argument. I don't want to monopolize it. It's still confusing.
Okay. Well, what happened in this case was Ms. Lupperall said she was injured in November 2008. She gets some treatment. Her doctor, Dr. Schaff, says a month later she's at maximum medical improvement with zero impairment. And she continues to work and life goes on. Eventually, her condition becomes worse. In August of 2009, she tells the employer, my condition is worse. The insurer ultimately decided to contest whether that was compensable. Therefore, we ended up in a hearing, and the judge at that time said that the case was compensable, but the judge went beyond his jurisdiction by also ordering respondents to pay temporary disability benefits. The reason the judge exceeded his jurisdiction is because she had already been placed at maximum medical improvement. This doesn't mean that because she'd been placed at maximum medical improvement, the judge didn't have jurisdiction until the Division IME process was engaged in. And the judge, that doesn't mean that Ms. Lupro couldn't get temporary disability benefits. It just means that the judge was not the appropriate person to make the initial determination. The judge should have declined award temporary disability benefits, should have simply said the case was compensable. Once the issue of compensability was determined with finality, the respondents would have filed a final admission based upon Dr. Schaff's finding of MMI and zero impairment. Then she would have been entitled to request a Division IME to challenge maximum medical improvement. Then the division examiner, not the judge, but the division examiner would have decided whether or not she was at maximum medical improvement for her work-related condition. And this all could have occurred sooner than it did had she just simply filed a claim sooner than she did. It was her choice as to when she filed the claim and started the whole process. And I might add that she hasn't really been harmed by by the delay in resolving these issues, because obviously they've been on appeal, because if the division examiner ultimately determined she was not at maximum medical improvement, then she would be entitled to temporary disability benefits retroactively all the way back to 2009 with 8% interest. So even though the litigation process has been dragged out, ultimately she won't have been harmed, at least financially, by this.
Can I ask you a question? What do you understand the Court of Appeals to have meant when they talked about the unique circumstances here allowed this entering the TTD without first having it? Undoing the MMI. What were the unique circumstances?
You know, it's hard for me to understand the unique circumstances. This case started out as what we call a medical-only claim, and then it turned into a lost-time claim when she began missing time from work. I think what they thought was unique about it was the fact that she had to wait several months. Was the fact that several months transpired before, and it was after she'd already been placed at maximum medical improvement before she started missing time from work.
And therefore, the Court of Appeals' concern was, well, how does she get temporary disability benefits if she's already been placed at maximum medical improvement? And the actual is fairly simple. She engages in the dying process. The dying examiner decides whether or not she's at maximum medical improvement, and then she gets her temporary disability benefits if the doctor says that she's not at maximum medical improvement.
I guess that's part of my question. I was a little confused about that. Does the Court of Appeals seem to be saying there's something of the circumstances here that should allow her to bypass the independent medical exam process?
The Court of Appeals did say that. My contention has always been there is nothing unique about this case, and I'm not quite sure why the Court of Appeals thought that it was. There are many, many medical-only cases. There are many times when medical-only cases turn into lost time cases. There are many times when the claimant's conditions wax and wane, worsening the condition happens, and then claimants recover. All of these are issues that are not unusual. They happen in all workers' compensation cases. And so I'm just not quite sure why the Court of Appeals found this case to be unique. I have a little bit less than 5 minutes. If I may, I'd like to reserve that time for a
sure.
Time.
You may.
Good morning, Honest Light Morning. My name is John Sparrow, and I represent the respondent at this level, Lane Lufboro, who I'll refer to as the injured worker. I was also counsel of record for Administrative Law Judge Edwin Felcher Jr. at the Industrial Claims Appeals Office and before the Colorado Court of Appeals. We request that this court affirm the Colorado Court of Appeals ruling, and there are only 2 points I want to stress here today. First, there's absolutely no connection between a worsened condition and the requirements to pursue a dime. There is none, and I think the Industrial Claims Appeals panel was confused on that issue, and Colorado Court of Appeals cleared it up. Second, the statutory requirements for the injured worker to pursue a DIME, a Division of Independent Medical Evaluation in this case, were never procedurally satisfied because she cannot do so until a final admission of liability is filed. If she were to file an application with the state, it would be rejected because there's not been a position taken by the respondents on...
So that's the whole key to your case here, right?
Yes,
sir. They didn't take a position on...
I'm sorry.
They didn't take a position on liability.
They never did. No, that's what's so confusing about it. If you look at the original statement of issues, it's in my brief. Judge Felcher says, what are the issues, Barbara? And why do you have petition reopen set? I said, I'll take it off. We don't even have a case. Compensability had not been established. Ms. Keck's client keeps saying it's open. I have no idea what open means. When a claim is accepted, a general admission of liability is filed with the state of Colorado, giving an injured worker notice of what the respondent is saying occurs in the case. And when it's closed, a final admission of liability occurs. They never took a position accepting responsibility. What they filed was a notice of contest. The important dates to remember are this. Date of injury is November 8th, 2008. On that date, she's given restrictions. And this is addressed in the record at page 110. Then the employer accommodates those restrictions. So my client lost no time for work, even though she was on a 5-pound restriction, because the employer says, come into work. Then up to December 9th of 2009, the authorized treating physician says, you're okay, go on your way. Ms. Lufboro goes on her way. And then about 8 months later, her back flares up. She says to her employer, I want to go back to the company doctor. Employer says, no, that's the long and short of it. She's given restrictions on August 24th, and at this time, the employer does not accommodate. Let's make this really easy. Let's assume Ms. Keck's client had filed a final admission of liability in December of 2009. And my client at that time did not pursue a division medical, independent medical evaluation. She only had 30 days to do so. 8 months later, she could have still gone into court with the medical record from her new treating provider, because they didn't provide a doctor, saying her condition's worse and it's related, and she would have never had to pursue an independent medical evaluation. It would never occur.
So what are this? Why is this a special circumstances of this case? It sounds like you're making the argument that just straight under the statute, if
yeah.
you follow the procedures, you just
to answer your question, which was Ms. Keck, why is it unique? I have no idea why the Court of Appeals says it's unique, except that there was never a final admission of liability filed, and yet they're arguing it's open, and yet they filed a notice of contest, which you can find at the record at page 59. The only piece of paper you have in your possession is Ms. Keck's client saying, My client wasn't injured on the job. So I think that's why they think it's a unique case. How can you say it's open when you say it didn't happen?
So you don't think the Court of Appeals disagreed with you and you're asking for a broader ruling than they would have interpreted the statute with regard to the requirement for a final admission of liability before the dying? You don't think they were finding that, notwithstanding that obligation, nevertheless, because of particular circumstances in this case, the dying was not required?
I hope I answered your question, Judge Coates. I think what they're saying is it's unique because it doesn't matter what occurred. The worsening statute, which is found in 843.303, is, 843.303, is separate and distinct. There's no correlation between the worsening statute and the requirement to pursue a dime. So I think that's why they're saying it's unique. I hope that answers your question.
Okay.
If there aren't any other questions, I don't mind if Ms. Keck has the rest of my time.
So. Well, we'll give her time.
Okay, all right. Thanks for your time, and have a good day.
Thank you.
Regarding Mr. Scarborough's points, I would like to address them both, but I'd like to address the second one first, which is that the statute that the respondents haven't stated a position on liability. This case was in its infancy. It's still in its infancy procedurally. We've just barely gotten past the point of deciding that she has a compensable claim. There's no opportunity for the respondents until compensability has been established to assess whether she's at maximum medical improvement and to file a final admission of liability. Now that compensability has been established, and once this appeal is through the process, the statute requires the respondents to move forward, which is to file a final admission of liability, and then she can request a division IMB.
Can I interrupt right there? So what do you see as the triggering point for a requirement to file a final admission of liability?
The triggering point is the physician statement that she's at maximum medical improvement with zero impairment, and she is losing some time from work. All those were satisfied in August of 2009. And the only reason it didn't happen is because we were still arguing about whether she'd been injured on the job. We couldn't proceed to file a final admission until we decided whether or not she'd actually sustained an injury on the job. That issue just got finally resolved with the Court of Appeals order. Now that that's been decided, we would be filing a final admission of liability based upon Dr. Schaaf's statement that she's at FMMI with zero impairment, and she would be able to ask for a division IV, except for the fact that if we file that final admission, we'd be in violation of Judge Felter's order, who orders to pay temporary disability benefits. We can't file a final admission for a permanent impairment when Judge Felter's order says that we're still supposed to be paying temporary disability benefits.
So if she experiences a worsening of her condition during this kind of limbo period before you've felt that you have an obligation to file the final admission of liability, what does she do?
All she had to do is what she did, file a claim for workers' compensation. She files a claim for workers' compensation. Had she filed it in 2008, my suspicion is the respondents probably would have admitted liability for it because they had already been paying for medical benefits. It was only when the issue mushroomed into a much bigger medical condition that respondents had second thoughts about whether this was really work-related. But all she could do is file that claim for workers' compensation, get the issue of compensability determined. When it's determined in her favor, then respondents must file a final admission. The case moves forward. She can ask for the division IME. She can challenge maximum medical improvement the way all other claimants do in open cases. And she would get her temporary disability benefits if the division examiner said that she was not at maximum medical.
So just let me get the answer to this. She has been getting this temporary disability benefits, correct?
No, she has not because...
Because you challenged it.
Because we challenge issue compensability.
Okay, so Judge Felter said she should be entitled to get these now while she's experiencing these pain.
Correct.
And the action you took has put that off. So whatever treatment she's got, she's paid for out of her own pocket.
No,
is that right?
No, Your Honor. No, she actually is getting medical benefits now based upon the Court of Appeals decision where the issue compensability.
But it took to the Court of Appeals decision. What happened between Judge Felder's decision and the Court of Appeals?
The appeals went on where all issues were being appealed. She couldn't be paid anything because of the appeals going on. She appealed as well as we did. This hasn't been a failure of the system. This has simply been a delay caused by the appeals. Both parties appealed respondents appealed Judge Felder's order. The Industrial Claims Appellate Panel ruled that she was not entitled to temporary disability benefits. Then the claimant appealed that. And then it went to the Court of Appeals. We're still on appeals. That's why I say procedurally this case is in its infancy. It's not that she's been denied benefits because the dime process has been revoked. It's she hasn't been receiving benefits because of the appeals that have been going on, raised by both parties in this case. Once we get beyond the appeals, if this court rules that the Court of Appeals erred, we will be filing a final admission of liability for, based upon Dr. Schaut's opinion, she can ask for a division IME on maximum medical improvement. That doctor will look at whether or not she's at maximum medical improvement at this time. He doesn't even need to look at whether her condition is worse. He doesn't need to look at whether whether she's entitled to temporary disability benefits. All he needs to do is establish at this time, is her condition stable? Does she need further medical treatment? Based upon those, he will decide whether or not she's at maximum medical improvement. If he decides she's not at maximum medical improvement, she gets her temporary disability benefits retroactive all the way back to 2009. Our only dispute here is that it's the division examiner who should be making this determination in the first instance, not the administrative law judge. He made the decision, and so did the Court of Appeals, out of a sense of expediency. The appeals were going on, they were dragging on, the litigation was dragging on, they didn't like that, so let's take a shortcut. Let's forget the division IME process. Let's just award her the temporary disability benefits because we see the writing on the wall. It looks to us like she's at maximum medical improvement. Let's not bother with the division IME. And in the process, what they've done is open the door for all claimants in all cases to say, we're not challenging the division, the treating physician's opinion on maximum medical improvement. We're just saying we got worse afterwards. We don't need to go there. The division examiner can determine maximum medical improvement without looking at whether or not the claimant's condition is worsened. What they've done is gutted the division IME process in terms of maximum medical improvement. It's not just this claimant, but all claimants who could say, I don't want to engage in the dying process. I'm not going to say the doctor is wrong. I'm just going to say my condition has gotten worse. Therefore, judge, not Dr. So-and-so, judge, award me temporary disability benefits even though I'm at maximum medical improvement.
Could I ask a question? You said that she could have avoided this by filing a claim earlier, which would have led ultimately to the final admission of liability, which would have then triggered this process to allow her to seek a dime. Do you then agree with opposing counsel that had she sought the dime earlier in the process, she would have not been able to do so? I understood that opposing counsel would be saying that that she would basically have shown the bar from seeking a dime earlier in the process. Do you agree with that? Because do you agree that the triggering event is the filing of the final admission of liability?
Yes, I agree that the triggering event is the final admission of liability.
Okay.
But the respondents couldn't file that because we're still arguing about whether or not she'd been injured on the job.
And so your response then, as I understand it, is simply that had she filed the whole process, started launching the process earlier, this
it
would have dragged out as
happened
far.
Much sooner.
Okay.
And in fact, had she launched the process back in December away, chances are good we wouldn't be here today. We wouldn't have been arguing about compensability. It was just facts changed several months later that made the respondents reconsider why were they admitting liability for alleged back injury that was from lifting a mere 4 baskets of chicken into a fryer. How do you get a back injury from that? That's why respondents started contesting compensability from the get-go. And their concern was, number one, was she really injured in November of 08? But even if she was, how was the serious exacerbation of her condition in 09 relate to lifting 4 baskets of chicken in 08, particularly when she had significant back problems earlier than 2008 that were work-related? So there's a big reason why respondents were contesting compensability, we had to get past that before we could ever get to the point of filing a final admission of liability and letting her contest her placement at maximum medical improvement.
Okay.
I believe my time's up.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you
sure.
very much.
Mrs. Barrow, I know you gave away your time, but we'll give you a chance to get it back if you want it. Ms. Keck had 3 minutes, as I see it. Do you want to say anything in rebuttal?
I do, Mr. Sparrow. Mr. Sparrow, I guess if you can slow down and walk me through sort of the process that happens. She injures her back, they give her maximum medical improvement, she goes back to work, and then it worsens. What were you supposed to do at that point? She complained to the employer that her back continued to hurt. they said, we disagree, and she went to her own doctor.
Right.
Am I correct at all?
You're 100% on the floor, Justice.
Okay. Where's the linchpin here that triggers? Because my understanding is you could seek the dime at that point because they hadn't filed their final.
I can't even seek the dime now as we sit here and talk because there's no final admission liability, and I've given the statutory cite that has to be filed for my client to do it. So, and that's why Judge, you probably like that. Edwin L. Felter said that it was, I didn't have to show a reopening, I just had to show a worsening, and that's why I keep stressing the worsening statute is separate and distinct from the dime. Even if everything had gone as Keck had asked, stated, and they filed a final admission, I still wouldn't have had to do a dime 8 months later. All the statute requires is I come with a medical record establishing a worsened condition, and if the judge finds the condition's worsened, it's reopened.
Okay, so you don't know what opened is. What is it when it's closed?
When it's closed, it's final. I can do closed.
Okay, no, that's what I'm asking. So give me the
closed bill. Is when the final admission liability is filed, giving the injured worker notice. This is the employer stating, we're done paying, this is how much we paid, this is what we're going to pay you for your injury, this is what we paid you in lost wage benefits, and if you don't like any of this, you have 30 days to tell us why we're wrong. That's the notice requirement, and that's why I allude to due process in my brief. My poor client never knows what to do because she's never been told. Ms. Keck's client keeps saying it's open, but no one knows what open is. Open is, and I use the, it's a game of gotcha. I mean, it was still contested when we confronted Judge Felter. They didn't come and say, oh yeah, she really had an injury in November, guys. They said no. They contested that answer.
So what did you expect that you were litigating in front of Judge Felter?
I had three things. I had to first establish she had an injury. Then I had to establish that there was a worsened condition. And then I had to establish that they refused to tender medical care because although you can base a worsened condition just on the testimony of the injured worker, I also wanted to have a medical record, which was a treating provider, who wasn't an authorized provider until Judge Felter said, look, this woman kept asking to see someone, the employer didn't let them see him. So those are the three things I had to establish. Causation, an injury occurred in November of 2008. Two, a worsened condition in August of 2009, as demonstrated by my client's testimony and the doctors, and then it went on with the lost wage component. They wouldn't let her go back to work. So
okay.
I was just arguing the worst.
Well, what about this point that you should have filed a compensation claim and didn't?
Well, I mean, she filed one long before we went to hearing, and their response was to file a notice of contest. So I think it's speculative to say my client would have accepted it because they still have it as we sit here today. The only record you have, I think it's 99 or 66, is a notice of contest. So, I mean, I know what she's telling you, but that's not the record reflects. They never accepted it. So I don't know what would have happened earlier. That's, your guess is probably better than mine, Justice Officer. There are no further questions. I ask you to affirm the Colorado Court of Appeals at any time, and have a good evening.
Thank you very much for your service, Rebecca. We thank both attorneys for your arguments and briefs, and the case will be submitted.